It is plain to see Hrydanus considered harlot and beast as being identical. However, not completely. He also continued to realize that he had to distinguish them, and because of this, he ran into difficulties. For what is nearly identical is difficult to distinguish. Hrydanus found the solution in this, that both beast and harlot, at different points in time, manifest themselves. For instance, in verse 16 and further, the Antichrist and his assistants are, in the opinion of Hrydanus, a particular manifestation of the world power, and the harlot an other concrete form of this, the papal church. I am not satisfied with this solution, and I will come back to this later on. There is in the exegesis of Hrydanus an unresolved tension between the identification and distinction of harlot and beast. He rightly perceived that one faces a dilemma with this exegesis of Revelation 17, if one does not persist in distinguishing these two. I believe that Reverend Ploy entangles himself in hopeless difficulties if he rigidly holds on to the identical quality of these. Difficulties which, in my opinion, cannot be resolved. If one should say, the harlot is the world, or the world power, and the beast as well, then he finds himself immediately entangled into mysteries. A. The harlot sits on the beast. Verse 3. Explanation. The world power sits on the world power. But my question is, what does that mean, sitting on? How is it possible for one to sit on himself? B. The harlot is completely undressed, eaten, and burned by the 10 horns of the beast. Verse 16. Explanation. The world power of the last hour is being destroyed by the anti-Christian world power. If the harlot is not the false church, but the world power, as Reverend Ploy argues, then she is at the moment of verse 16 herself the anti-Christian world power, and practically identical with the 10 horns, which are busy making her desolate and are burning her. In other words, the world power is devouring itself, or the Antichrist eats itself and destroys its own kingdom? I am asking this because I am totally unable to understand this explanation. Hrydanus at least says that in verse 16 we must think of the false church, the papal one. C. This harlot commits adultery with the kings of the earth, 18 verse 9. In other words, with the rulers of this world power. But if the harlot also represents the world power, then it would mean that she commits adultery with herself. What does this mean? Reverend Ploy thinks that he can get out of this dilemma by simply referring to several texts from the Old Testament where adultery is used when pointing to idolatry. In this case, we would get, the world power is committing idolatry with itself. I did not accurately examine all the texts which Reverend Ploy refers to. I am not convinced that these indicated passages are speaking of idolatry. Let us leave this aside for the time being. In all cases, it is clear that one city committed adultery with another city. Nowhere does it say that Tyre, Nineveh, etc. are committing adultery with themselves, but they did so with other powers. Adultery is committed by two distinct powers. That is why I also do not understand the references to these texts in the explanation of Revelation 17, in order to defend his opinion on the identification of the harlot and the beast. We can only speak of adultery, providing that we speak of two parties. But two parties do not exist when we make them identical. Do not misunderstand me. I readily admit that idolatry is often qualified as adultery. This is possible because there is first a covenant between two parties, namely God and his people. The second party became unfaithful to her husband by involving herself with a third party. So, two distinguishable parties always do exist. As far as I am aware, the Bible speaks of people who commit adultery with idols. but not of the world committing adultery with itself. These dilemmas aroused my doubts regarding the identification theory. If harlot and beast are actually the same power, then the world sits on herself, and I fail to understand what this is supposed to mean. Then she kills and eats herself, but this is in contradiction with the context. Then she commits adultery with herself, but as far as I know, that is not what the Bible is calling idolatry. Nothing positive has yet been said of my exegesis, the harlot is the false church. At this time, I was only concerned to make it clear why I started to doubt what Reverend Ploy calls the popular opinion. For the moment, I will not go any further than the thesis, harlot and beast are distinguishable. They are two diverse concrete bodies. Section 4. Which data must be taken into consideration? It is not necessary to dwell on the question of what should be understood regarding the beast. I think that Reverend Ploy agrees with me that the beast is the description of the world empire, or for that matter, the world state, which manifests itself in different forms and rears its various heads in the course of history. But the unanimity is lost as soon as the question is asked, which solid power does the harlot symbolize? It is superfluous, in my opinion, to go into the ideas of all sorts of commentators who are critical of Holy Scripture. There are several theories which call attention to the whole exegesis of Revelation, and as such also touch chapter 17. I am thinking of the traditional historical, time historical, end historical, and the general historical conceptions. The explanation of the starting point and method of each of these theories would lead me too far off topic. Moreover, too much scientific nonsense would enter into the picture. I hold fast to my conviction that all readers, if they are able to judge this, will agree with me that these opinions do not do justice to Scripture and ought to be rejected by believers in Holy Scripture. In this, Reverend Ploy also kept himself to the explanations which were given within Reformed circles, and I reserve the right to keep my answer within the bounds of his intention. I am of the opinion that in our circles we can reduce the meaning of the harlot to three. A. The harlot is the world power, and therefore practically identical to the beast. B. The harlot is an indication of the world, but then especially from the aspect of culture and wealth. In other words, the harlot is culture. C. The harlot is the false church. I admit this diagram is more or less simplistic, for there are many variations, modifications, and combinations. With Professor Gradanus, for instance, we already see more or less a combination of A and C. Naturally, the possibility exists for several other combinations and modifications. I believe there is no point in going into this. In short, permit me to indicate three views: the political, A, the cultural, B, and the ecclesiastical, C. In order to find an answer, we must first carefully gather the data which Scripture offers us. And it would be wise to immediately classify this data. For we find one piece of data in the description of John's vision, and another in the explanation which the angel gives him. I classify then: 1. Data in the description of John's vision. A. She is portrayed as a woman. B. Further on as a woman called the great harlot because of her evil practices. For that matter, a woman who is thus stipulated over against the point of marital fidelity, verse 1 and 2, compare 4b and 5b. C. She is introduced as sitting on the scarlet beast, which has 7 heads and 10 horns, verse 3. D. She is also said to be sitting on many waters, verse 1. E. She commits her adultery with the kings as well as with all inhabitants of the earth, verse 2. F. Her garment is characterized as manufactured of purple and scarlet. Her ornaments consist of gold, jewels, and pearls, and she has a golden cup in her hand. Verse 4. G. John sees the name written on her forehead, Mystery, Babylon the Great, Mother of Harlots and Abominations of the Earth. Verse 5. H. She is drunk with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Verse 6. 2. Data and the explanation which the angel gives of this vision, inclusive of the sections in chapters 18 and 19. A. Her sitting on the scarlet beast with seven heads is explained as sitting on seven mountains and at the same time sitting on seven kings. Verse 9 and 10. This corresponds with 1c. B. Her sitting on many waters is explained as her position in the midst of peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Verse 15. C. 1d. C. Her destruction comes when the ten horns of the beast begin to hate, destroy, undress, eat and burden her. Verse 16. D. She is the great city, Greek Paos. Verse 18a. E. As such she reigns over the kings of the earth. Verse 18b. F. The people of the Lord are summoned to come out of her, lest they take part in her sins and share in her judgments. 18 verse 4 and further. G. The wealth of her garment is illustrated in 18 verse 7, 11 and further. Compare 1f. H. The matter of her drunkenness with the blood of the saints is raised again in 18 verse 20, 24, 19 verse 2. Compare 1h. I. Those who committed adultery with her are appalled when her judgment comes upon her. 18 verse 9 and further. K. On the other hand, there is rejoicing in heaven, for now the marriage of the Lamb has come. 19 verse 7 and further. As far as I know, I combined all the elements which we have to bring into consideration for the explanation. Offhand, we can see right away that the angel does not go into all the sections of the vision, and at the same time other elements are mentioned in the explanation which John did not bring into account. Methodically, it seems correct to start with the data of group 2. The vision is obscure in many respects itself, is it not? This is the reason why the angel gives John further information. If we want to approach the vision, then we have to start our examination by what the angel himself says pertaining to the explanation. According to me, we have to attempt to give a suitable account from the data classified under group 2 to the elements arranged under group 1. Section 5. Rejection of the cultural opinion. As far as I am concerned, one of the aforementioned opinions must be eliminated immediately, in particular, the cultural conception. The world as cultural power is not the denotation of the term harlot. 1. Although no one will deny, especially with respect to chapter 18, that there is a close connection between the harlot and culture, it cannot be said that John teaches the destruction of the world with her culture in the days of the eighth king here. We saw, did we not, comparing the data mentioned under 2g, that a world still exists after the harlot and her wealth have perished. Also the world powers, the political mighty ones, yet exists, 18 verse 9, as well as the people who took charge of the manufacturing, transporting, and selling of this wealth. Therefore, it is incorrect to say that culture is ruined at this very moment. not even if they add to this the limitation that the apostate culture is meant here. The merchants, etc., cannot see a consumer's market anymore for their luxury articles, which they formerly supplied to the harlot, verse 11. Yet there is no indication at all that the apostate culture as such has disappeared, or that the world as cultural power has ceased to exist. 2. To this we add 1f. It is certainly significant that the vision is making a distinction between the harlot herself on the one hand, and the garment, as well as her adornments, on the other. 3. If we come to the understanding that the harlot is the world as cultural power, then what it says in 19 verse 3 has to be taken seriously. Her smoke goes up forever and ever. This positively signifies that the destruction is without remainder and definite. Therefore, this blaze is never extinguished. Then, from this point of reference, we have to accept the fact that the world power, with her apostate culture, is ruined forever. Yet this does not coincide with the suggestion of chapter 18, on which we touched under group 1. 4. Even more important, at a time the harlot with her display goes up in flames, the eighth king, the Antichrist, is ruling with his henchmen. The world power has not disappeared absolutely yet. Are they of the opinion that this eighth anti-Christian power will be without culture? I believe that scripture teaches us that especially in those days the apostate culture will reach its highest point. They will still send each other presents, 11 verse 10, and rejoice. Cultural means and possibilities are abundant. Paul, for that matter, speaks in the same manner in 2 Thessalonians 2. The Antichrist will come with all power, signs, and lying wonders, with all unrighteous deception, verse 9 and 10. This surely means that the world, as cultural power, reaches the most extreme development, to a culture of hellish refinement. The Antichrist only finishes off the existence of the harlot and the monuments of the culture which she built, but not the world power or the world empire, not even if we take it only from the cultural perspective. I should say a few more things about this, for there are authors who, when discussing the harlot, think only of one specific historical greatness of the world empire, which is the Roman Empire. For example, Professor Schilder in Christus en Cultuur, Christ and Culture, page 71, compare his book on the Revelation of John, is still virtually in agreement with Gredanus. This way we are ending up with, the Antichrist does not make an end of the world and its culture, but of one specific empire and the typical culture of its realm. Yet, I think that the text itself contradicts the identification the harlot is the Roman Empire with its cultural wealth. I cannot go into this in detail. I have to refer to my first brochure, especially to those sections in which I give an exegesis of the beast with its seven heads,